Hey guys, and welcome to the Tokyo Lens podcast. And as always, if you're a regular listener, welcome back. And for regular listeners and brand new listeners alike, I kind of want to start today's episode with a bit of a background of the podcast itself. And there is a reason for this, so bear with me for 30 seconds to a minute. So if you're new to the podcast, first and foremost, this podcast kind of started as an opportunity for me to expand on topics from the Tokyo Lens YouTube channel. And as it grew, it became a little bit more than that. Every now and then, I would create podcast-specific episodes and topics. Every now and then, we would even go through an article, and I would try to give some value inside of reading that article by adding my own personal insights, experiences, opinions, jokes, whatever it is. More than anything, the podcast is an opportunity for us to connect a little more often than we do over on YouTube. For regular listeners of the podcast, you'll know that a large part of what started it was just going over Tokyo Lens Q&As and going into the answers in a lot more detail than we did over on the channel. And that is one of the great benefits in my mind to having the podcast. It gives us an unrestricted option where we can just sit and talk and not be worried about being encumbered by time. But every now and then, the lines get blurred between what should be going on the podcast and what should be making its way onto the Tokyo Lens YouTube channel. And this is happening more and more often. There are topics that I want to be able to cover on both. In fact, every now and then I will start outlining what I see as an episode or something that I can give a little bit of value with. And when I'm done outlining it, I don't know which platform I should go with, whether it should be YouTube or whether it should be the podcast. And to be honest with you, more often than not, simply because there's less of a requirement for visuals and less of a requirement for me to contain it in time, I end up leaning towards the podcast. But recently, there's an episode that was entirely designed to be a podcast and ended up instead on the Tokyo Lens YouTube channel. Now, not everybody who listens to the podcast is a viewer of YouTube, and I understand that. And some of you have been kind enough to send me messages and DMs and everything like that, so thank you very much. But on account of that, there's a video that I recently put up, I would say just a couple days ago, that I wanted to share and add a little bit of value in here in the podcast. Now, if you are a regular viewer of the YouTube channel, what I'm going to be doing today is I'm going to be covering things that I cut out of that or adding to it or adding stories to it. But before we do that, for those listeners who aren't viewers of the YouTube channel or aren't big watchers of YouTube videos, I'm going to play the audio only from that video, and not the entire thing, just about an 8.5 minute segment. So if you have already seen the video itself, feel free to skip ahead about 8.5 minutes from the time that the music starts, and you'll be into the podcast only content. If you haven't seen the video yet, I'm going to start it right about now. We're talking today about being lonely in Japan and some of the things that can lead up to that and some stuff that you can do, but I kind of want to start by painting a little bit of a picture. So for the sake of imagination, let's say that you've made the commitment, you've decided to move to Japan, you save up your money and you take the plunge. But shortly after getting here, you start to realize that making friends and meeting people is a bit more of a challenge than you initially anticipated it to be. And in a very short period of time, you start finding yourself feeling lonely and isolated. It's not just you. It happens a lot. And that's kind of what I want to talk about today. So this entire topic came up because about a week ago, I was at an event where I had the opportunity to meet a lot of people who had just came to Japan. Hi guys, it was great meeting you, by the way. And fairly early on in our conversation, this topic came up and what leads to it and what you can do to combat it. And I thought it was a really great conversation. This topic itself is all too real. And for a lot of people, loneliness is going to hit hard. Like, you're not just moving to a new country or in general to a new place where you might not know that many people, but you're also separating from the people that you do know and that you've grown up with, whether it be family or friends. Combined with the fact that the longer you're away from home, the more stuff back home you're going to miss, whether it be weddings or events, birthdays, or in the worst case scenario, even the passing of loved ones. Like, you might not be able to get back for some of those important moments. I've been in Japan now over 10 years and I've missed more than my fair share. All things considered, it's pretty easy for the dream of living in Japan to turn into the nightmare of being isolated in Japan. All of this kind of reminded me of a story from a couple of years back when one of my friends moved from Canada to Japan and ended up leaving a few short months later because he found himself being really detached and lonely, not having a good time in Japan at all. And I think a lot of it came down to falling into bad habits or bad routines like many of us do. And I've spent a lot of time over the years thinking about this and talking to other friends about what led to this individual's eventual departure. And hopefully what's distilled from this over the years will be able to give you a little bit of value. So starting by getting one of the most obvious ones out of the way, the language barrier. Especially if your goal is to make as many Japanese friends as possible, the language barrier can feel like a really big one. And I've advocated time and time again that you don't need to be able to speak Japanese before you move here. Obviously, unless your goal is to be able to connect with and meet as many Japanese people as possible, that obviously changes things a little. Now, studying before you come can have its benefits, or even joining a language school while you're here may introduce you to like-minded people, but more than anything, I would hope that it would give you the inspiration that you need to go out and use the Japanese that you've learned. It's kind of like when you get a new car, you'll find any excuse to go out and drive it. Every time I learn something new in Japanese, I can't wait to get out there and use it or put myself in a situation where I have the opportunity to use it. And that's one of the biggest benefits of studying Japanese while you're here. Hopefully it keeps you motivated and on your toes to meet people and use that Japanese. But whether you speak Japanese or not, there's a second really big problem that I think a lot of people fall victim to. I'm just going to put it really simply. Go out, do something, ideally with people. One of the most common pitfalls that I see people falling into again and again and again is the pitfall of going to work and coming home and letting your entire life revolve around that. Hobbies can be an incredible gateway into meeting a community of people that you otherwise wouldn't meet. Like, my very first hobby in Japan that led to me meeting people and making friends was festivals. And then after that, I got into cars and drifting. And then after that was the shamisen and then photography. And each and every one of these led to me meeting a group or community of people that really helped me build out a life here in Japan. And that leads me to another really big one, which is building a balanced life, not putting all of your eggs or effort into one basket, whether it be work or one of your social circles or your running club or whatever it is, because not everybody is here for the long term. In fact, a really, really common struggle that I see is there's a lot of people who are only here for a year or 6 months or maybe a year and a half on a working holiday or something like that. And I see a lot of newcomers come into Japan and complain that the more longer residents can be unapproachable or snobbish. And then I see these same long-term residents that are talking about being openly unwilling to commit to a friendship with somebody that they know is only going to be here for a short period of time. And more often than not, all of this starts to lead to finger pointing and blame leads to excuses. And that's another really, really big one. Excuses tend to be the easy way out. And I've seen a lot of people end up isolated or leaving Japan and making excuses the whole way out. I don't speak Japanese, or I'm too busy with work, or things are too expensive, or even something really super simple, like it getting dark as early as it does around the winter. Like, I'm from Canada, so it gets dark fairly late thanks to daylight savings time, but here in Japan, around 4:30 p.m. in the winter, it's already dark, and it can feel like the day is done, and people will lean into these excuses because it's just easier than going out and doing the work. And legitimately, each one of those excuses and more, individually, if not put together, can be a reason to not go out and do stuff. And it reminds me of this CEO that I met a few years back who throws these networking events for companies to network with potential future employees. And he went out of his way to put these events at incredibly inconvenient times, like 8 p.m. on a Sunday or something like that. And when I asked him about why he scheduled them at such inconvenient times, he made a really good point. He's like, the hardest part is just putting in the effort to show up. Excuses are easy, showing up is hard. And this issue in itself is not unique to non-Japanese people coming to Japan. In fact, it is a well-known issue in Japan that Japanese people also struggle with loneliness. And in the same way that you might want to come to Japan and connect with locals and make Japanese friends, there's just as many Japanese people who want to be able to get out and connect and meet non-Japanese people and expand their world as well. That being said, I feel like it's also important to mention the importance of realistic expectations. I'm sure this is not going to be you, but don't be that person who comes to Japan and expects all the people around them to flock to them just because they're non-Japanese. Nobody likes that person. Do expect to have to put in the same level of effort that you would have to put in back home to meet people, build connections, and make friendships. That's a lot more realistic. And with it being almost 2020, there's no shortage of portals to kick off friendships. Things like interest-based Facebook groups or even Twitter. I've made a lot of friends over the years on Twitter. But the key is not to let the online interaction outweigh the face-to-face interaction. So just take the risk, invite people out for coffee or a jog or whatever it is that you're into. The point is, go outside, do stuff, meet people. Like, if you're lonely or worried about being lonely in Japan, so are other people. A lot of them, actually. And if this little video can help motivate you or those people to actually go out and potentially find each other, then hopefully we'll have done something good today. All right, guys, so welcome back to the podcast exclusive section. If you did listen through that, I hope that you enjoyed it. If you skipped over it, welcome back. So there's actually a lot of stuff that I cut out of this particular video because I don't think anybody wants to sit down and listen to a 20, 30 minute video, but I want to kind of share some of it with you guys here in the podcast. Some are just sections that I've cut out from it. Some are slight insights or things that have come up in the comments section that I got a lot of value from. And some might just be anecdotes and personal stories, as we often do here on the Tokyo Lens podcast. More likely than not, I will find myself distracted and sidebarring and going completely off topic. It's really the theme of what we do. So I kind of want to start into the topic of the just finding friends as you build a life. So I talked a bit about building a life at the end and how it's important to build a balanced life. And I think that one thing that I want to address, our first sidebar here, is that I think the biggest section that I cut out from this video is the fact that as I made it, I realized that obviously this isn't just for Japan. This isn't just for people coming to Japan. In fact, some of my Japanese friends who have lived overseas or are currently living overseas contacted me after I put out this video, and they're like, this is so applicable to my life in Australia or my life in Canada or my life in the US right now. So many of these points hold relevant. But something that I think is a little more unique is, you know, related to Japan itself, is that if you're coming to Japan, I think a lot of people have a very difficult decision to make, and it's something that kind of adds a little bit of challenge to it. And that decision is, do you want to make Japanese friends? Do you want to make more Western friends? Do you want to make a balanced mix of both? Or are you one of the people who just doesn't care and just wants to meet people in general? And depending on this, a lot of things can change. You see, I've met... So I'm going to tell you a story about a buddy of mine back in Canada. We'll call him T. He was a Japanese gentleman. And T was very, very much dedicated to only learning English and connecting with Canadians while in Canada. You see, in university, more often than not, and my university was most definitely no exception to this, Japanese will form like a little bit of a community. They will have a group of Japanese people that often hang out and talk together and everything like that. Well, T avoided this group like the plague. He wanted absolutely nothing to do with it. He would only hang out and speak with non-Japanese people, mostly where he could, Canadian, and then, you know, some other international students. But he really wanted to integrate into life in Canada and not fall into the habit and routine of speaking Japanese. Now, the Japanese around him took it in one of two different ways. Well, I'd say three. Number one, people just who didn't care. We're like, yeah, whatever, live his life, whatever. Number two, people who are like, I really respect that. I can see what he's doing. He's trying to really immerse himself and not get caught up in the thing that many of us have caught up with, is getting sucked into the comfort of the Japanese group. And many of them, honestly, after 3 to 4 years, didn't end up making that many Canadian friends. They made probably a couple, but nowhere near as much as T. And then there was a small group who was offended by it, who was like, how dare he shun the other Japanese students? It's borderline, it's racist. Like, he's being racist against his own people. Like, why doesn't he want to speak to other Japanese? Why doesn't he want to spend time with other Japanese? And I spent the entirety of like the 4 years we spent together just trying to figure out how I felt about it, because I could understand in a certain degree why some people would be offended, but also I had a great deal of respect for what he was doing. He saw how many people fell into the habit of being comfortable hanging out with other Japanese people and speaking Japanese all the time, and he did not want that. He wanted to make the absolute best of his time in Canada, and that included meeting as many Canadian people as possible. He was forcing himself to be in a situation where as soon as he made a Japanese friend or two, he wouldn't feel the need to go out and make other friends. And he knew that about himself. He had enough self-awareness to know that making Japanese friends might hold a detriment to him. So he forced himself to communicate and connect with a lot of Canadians. And to be honest, I don't think I saw any other international student in our university make as many Canadian friends as he did. He really, in the years that he was there, was just like another Canadian. He had a Japanese accent and could speak another language. He really worked himself in. But at the same time as all of that, I also kind of didn't care. It was his life. And at the same time, I was trying to do my own stuff. So at the end of university, it was amazing because I still sat on the fence between the three of those. I could understand the people who were offended. I respected unbelievably what he was doing, and I still just couldn't care less. But when you come into Japan, I think if you are a non-Japanese person coming to Japan and you know, for example, that you are going to be here on a one-year working holiday, you've got a decision to make. Do you want to interact with and meet everybody? Because meeting everybody might open up opportunities all of its own. You might meet, you know, North American people, people from the UK, people from Australia, who will introduce you to some of the best spots in Tokyo or some of the best people here in Japan. When I was back in Canada, my Japanese friends knew all the best spots in Canada. Like, they took me to bars, restaurants, and little hidden alleys that I otherwise never would have known about. And it made me fall in love with exploring. And I brought that love with me to Tokyo. So there is something to be said about communicating, not just with Japanese people, but for some people, the entire goal is to use their 1 year, or if you're from Australia, and I believe maybe New Zealand, I'm sorry if I'm wrong, but they get a year and a half. They actually get 18 months for a working holiday. If that's all you've got, and you know that you're going back home after that, I can understand why some people would want to attach and only put themselves in situations where they meet Japanese people. So having that balance and understanding what's important to you. Do you want to communicate with everyone in Japan? Do you want to use your time to just communicate with Japanese people? Now, I've kind of gone on about this section for a little while now. And one of the main reasons is because you can really change who you interact with based on the activities that you choose to do. And I'm going to jump right into the main one that I want to talk about here. And it's one that I mentioned slightly in the video, but kind of sidestepped greatly. In my personal experience, and I know that I have mentioned this in other podcast episodes, but the single best way to connect with and meet Japanese people, especially people in your community, the people living around you, is to join a matsuri or a local festival. Right now, we are in the middle of May. This is peak festival season. In fact, today and tomorrow, and I'm pretty sure the day before yesterday, is the Kanda Matsuri, which something really interesting that I've just realized recently. If you just go into Google Maps, anytime there's one of these matsuri or parades or anything like that, and just kind of scroll to the area where it is, you can actually see like a little map of where the festival is taking place, which is very interesting. But it's about how you get into these, because it's not like you can just rock up and be like, hey, I want to carry that mikoshi, or I want to join this festival. Or can you? Well, you can, and I'll touch on that in a second, but I wouldn't recommend it. I would recommend, if you really want to do it well, to do it the right way. And what I meant by you can is there's always going to be someone who's nice enough to be like, hey, do you want to come in and try? Every single festival I have ever been at, I saw somebody, one of the Japanese people, be like, hey, come in and try carrying this mikoshi. They're incredibly welcoming, incredibly kind. It is a large part of the festival's atmosphere. And that is the greatest part of the festival itself, is this open, welcoming atmosphere. But if you want to do it right, find the local chokai, or I guess kind of festival association group, closest to your house. You might need to ask around, ask some of your neighbors, you know, if there's a kaninin-san or like staff at your building, ask them. If not, you can swing by the local city office and just ask, how can I get in touch with my local chokai? Now, you can register for the festival. The registration usually comes with a bit of a donation, which will give you the hanten or the jacket that you'll wear. And then just spend the time getting to know the people and finding out how to join the festival, what to do, where to go. And then afterwards, there's always groups of people hanging out and drinking. Some of the best friends that I have made in my entire time in Japan have been through festivals. Some lifelong friends that I have here, I met at a festival, Sanja Matsuri, back in 2008. It was my very first year to join festivals, and it is an incredible way to meet and connect with people. Now, be forewarned, if you're a lot more private or a lot more of an introvert or not a big drinker at all, the festival atmosphere might not exactly be for you, but that doesn't mean that you're out of luck or out of hope. In fact, on this YouTube video, I said to people, what I want to do is make this video more than just a piece of content that will raise awareness about loneliness in Japan, but I also want it to serve as somewhat of a conduit for social interaction. And so I encouraged everybody to leave something in the comments below where they felt they would get some value, share a resource that has helped connect them with people, or a story, or a cool place to go. A lot of people talked about, in some cases, guest houses can be a great way to meet people. Other people felt the exact opposite of it. A lot of people shared the names of apps and Facebook pages. Another really good one, and this is one that I recommend for somebody who is or even isn't a photographer. There is no shortage of photography groups who get together and either go through Japan or even just hang out in Tokyo doing photography sessions. Now, you might be like, well, I don't really have a camera. If you have a smartphone, that's the word I'm looking for, smartphone, more often than not, that is more than enough to do it. You can just grab your smartphone, be like, hey guys, I want to join you. I've only got a phone. Is that okay? More often than not, it's not just about the photography. It's about just getting together, exploring the city, and meeting people. And a lot of these are not always the loudest, most outgoing, crazy types. Almost any one of these groups I have joined has been more introverted or laid-back individuals. And it's a really good experience. I've been in these groups within Tokyo and found little hidden spots that I never would have known of before. I have traveled with some of these groups outside of Tokyo to find cool, interesting, photogenic or photographic, just nice spots. These groups, these photography groups in particular, this would just be one of my personal recommendations. But again, the video, which will be linked in the description box of this podcast, the comments section of that video is just ripe with so much useful content and information. So many people in there reaching out, putting themselves out on the line. So if you're looking to meet some genuine people and make some friends, whether you are moving to Japan and you're looking to meet people, whether you're in Japan hoping to meet people, or if you are a Japanese person looking to make some non-Japanese friends and use your English, it's all in the comment section of that video. Feel free to share some of your advice and your stories. And anyways, I'm going to set this aside. And there's a couple more things that I wanted to touch on in this video that I didn't get really deeply into. And one of them is the balance of social media versus in real life. And this is one that I feel has been covered really well in other people's content, so I didn't want to get too deeply into because I feel that the topic has been covered much better than I can. But the simple explanation or description of it is, all too often, and I think it's starting to happen more and more, we spend so much time on our phones, interacting with people maybe on Instagram or on Twitter, leaving comments on things like YouTube and everything like that, that we kind of fill ourselves up and we're like, oh, well, I'm good. I've had lots of social interaction today. And I've been in this situation myself. I've been in situations where I'll spend an entire day getting caught up on YouTube comments, Twitter, DM replies on Instagram, commenting on friends and other people's photos, sending video DMs to people through Instagram. And at the end of the day, I feel like I've done a full day of human social interaction, but in all reality, that's the word I'm looking for, in all reality, I haven't left the couch. I've done all of that from the couch or even worse yet, I have been out and about. Yes, very Canadian, out and about. Do I say a boot? I don't think I say it. That's a boot. See, it's a boot, like a boot that goes on your foot. I say out and about. Anyway, it's a lot of people are like, oh, you say a boot. And I'm like, no, I don't. Any sidebar over. The point being, there have been entire days where I have been out in public. I have been taking trains. I have been at restaurants and cafes. And I've been replying to comments and everything, and I have not made contact with a single real human around me. And I feel like, oh, I've had all this interaction today, but really I've just shut out the world around me. And it's great because you don't have to feel entirely alone, but spending too much time on the phone, I spend more than a day just replying to comments and whatnot, and I need to get out and interact with a person. So don't fall into the habit. And that's what it really comes down to, is falling into these habits. And these habits are more often than not. And this is the big part that I didn't cover in the video because I thought it might be a little bit too heavy for a 10-minute video. So I wanted to leave it for the podcast. And who knows, if you guys respond well to this, if I get a couple DMs saying, hey, I really appreciated this piece of content, then maybe I will find a way to work this into a follow-up. But in my experience and in my opinion, the two things that really, really lead to finding yourself lonely in Japan, and they kind of interact with each other, so it's kind of hard to put them in any particular order, but one is comfort and complacency. You see, there's something oddly comfortable, and this is a really weird thing for me to say, but there's something oddly comfortable about the fact that Japanese homes are slightly smaller. You see, even if you just live by yourself in a tiny Japanese home, the house doesn't feel that empty because it's small and you're in it. Whereas for me personally, being back in Canada, if my big empty house was empty, I felt much more alone than I do in a tiny Tokyo apartment. I feel a lot less alone in a small space than I do in a big space. Mind you, I was one of those children who would build like a fort in the closet. Like, I would set up a bed and blankets and everything, and I would hang out in the closet all the time and sleep in there and read books in there with a little light and everything. I've always liked small spaces. Not everybody does. But me personally, I find an innate comfort in the small space. But this really is more of a sidebar than the main point. The main point is people get comfortable. People get comfortable not just with their living space, but with their schedule and the life that they've built. They get comfortable coming home at a certain time. They get comfortable turning on Netflix. When I first came to Japan, there was no Netflix that you could tune into on your computer or on your Chromecast or whatever you watch it on. There was none of this. If you wanted to get like North American stuff, you had to go over to Staya and rent DVDs of like Friends or whatever movie you wanted to rent and watch it on your laptop. Or if you had a DVD player and computer and TV, go for it. But now we get comfortable. We can just go home at 7 p.m., turn on Netflix, have a drink, go back to work the next day, and when we get home, turn on Netflix again. We get into these rhythms. And that's really only half of what it is, because the other half is fear. And fear is the really, really big thing that I think leads to a lot of people finding themselves stressed and lonely in Japan. There's so many things to fear. There's fearing putting yourself out there. There's fearing going through all the effort to try and meet people and finding people, you know, maybe you're worried that they won't like you or that you won't like them. Or I think one of the really, really big ones that I've seen a lot of is for people who have lived in one country or one city their entire life, they come to a place like Japan, and whether it be through Japanese people or through other international people, they see a variety of personality types that they're not accustomed to. Like, when I came from Canada to Japan, it took me a little while to adjust to the personality types and recognize the personality types of the people around me. And for a lot of people, this becomes fear, the fear of the unknown. Are they going to dislike me? And it's admittedly much harder for a lot of people as an adult to make bonds and friendships than it is when you're younger. So there's already that fear and anxiety on top of everything else. And it could be fear of something like going out, and like, what if your friends invite you out and they end up going to a place that's much more expensive than you have money for? What if you don't have, like, what if they're like, we're going to go out for dinner, then we're going to hit drinks, then we're going to karaoke, and you're like, yo, I just got to Japan. I've only been working for a month. I haven't got my first paycheck yet. I can't afford to go hang out with people. There's all these little things, whether it be fear of people, fear of finance, fear of failure, all these little fears that stop people from stepping one to two steps outside of their comfort zone and taking the risks that it takes in order to meet people. And this was really one of the biggest parts that I wanted to get to in the video content, but kind of avoided because in all honesty, it's heavy facing the fact that you're not going out and doing stuff, that you're feeling lonely or you're having these stresses because you're afraid of something, and then figuring out what it is that's stopping you, what it is that you're afraid of, and saying that this fear is unfounded. Like, I can understand, like, if you are genuinely stressed about the finance side of things, which when you first come to Japan is a major issue for, I think, every normal human. It doesn't matter if you are rich or poor, moving to another country, there's cost involved in that. And when you've just spent a ton of money, everyone's first reaction is to kind of save a little bit, whether it be for 1 month, 2 months, three, six, whatever. And so you're going to be less willing to go out and invest in social time with a whole bunch of people than you would if you were already here for 6 months, a year. And more often than not, people find themselves missing opportunities at the beginning because they're worried about not being able to afford it, or they're worried about not being able to connect with people. Or a really, really big one, and I did touch on this a little bit in the video, is if your goal is to meet and hang out with Japanese people and you aren't comfortable or confident in your Japanese skill, anything outside of a one-on-one conversation can become very stressful. I'm going to make a confession to you guys right here in the podcast today, something that I hope that you'll be able to relate to a little and maybe gain a little bit of understanding. So I came to Japan for the first time in 2007. I moved in November of 2007. I've been here well over a decade now. I'm comfortable with most situations, if not all situations, or so I thought, in Japanese. I can, you know, hang out with my friends. I can talk about a wide variety of topics from science to news for the most part. Okay, news. I might not be as comfortable with news. I don't know why that came up. Science, cars, shamisen, music, stuff like this. As soon as I think news, I think politics, and I'm not comfortable with that level of conversation. This is not the point. The main point is I can do one-on-one, I can do group, I can do telephone, I can handle business situations. These are all fine for me, but there's one situation that still to this day causes me more anxiety than it probably should, and this is entirely my fault. This is group chats. And I don't mean like face-to-face sitting and chatting. I mean like a Facebook chat group or a Line chat group. I'm a part of a couple chat groups that are pretty much just, you know, all in Japanese language. And I'm the only or only one of, you know, one or two non-Japanese people in the group. Some of it is for, like, you know, shamisen or work-related stuff. Some of it is for more social stuff. And these chat groups, even for me, after all this time in Japan, tend to cause me a little more anxiety, simply because everyone's shooting off those messages so quickly. And if I were speaking, I feel like I could jump in there. But by the time I write out what I want to write, make sure that my grammar is correct and that I've used the proper kanji and everything, because writing does take me a little more time than reading does, there's already been maybe two new messages or three new messages, because they're moving at the kind of speed and I'm not moving at that. I'm moving more like, and then one more. There we go. So I'm moving maybe at half to one third the speed they are, which means I miss out. And the conversation's already moved on, and I'm like, oh, now I got to reply to that. Oh, now I got to. So more often than not, I just kind of sit quietly in these group chats, and when something has died down long enough for me to add something of value to the chat, then I add it in. But the point is, this happens to everybody somewhere. And for the longest time, I would just avoid being in these group chats altogether. But you see, what happened with this is that I would start missing out more and more and more. There'd be invites happening and I would just be like, you know what, this just looking at this chat is causing me too much anxiety. I'm not even going to look at it. and I would end up missing events or drinking parties or an invite over to somebody's house or this, that, the next thing. And then they'd be like, yo, why didn't you show up? And I'm like, show up to what? And they're like, well, it was in the group chat. And I'm like, yeah, sorry, I stopped reading that like a week ago. Entirely my bad. But my own fear caused me to miss out on probably more opportunities to meet and interact and socialize with people than I'm willing to admit up front, or at least I was until I sat down to record this episode with you guys. And so that right there hopefully serves as like a little bit of an example of how fear can impact and lead to that loneliness in Japan that I feel like we all worry about or struggle with in one way or another. I don't think that there's anybody in Japan, or even for that matter, because as I said before, this topic isn't just specific to Japan. I think that this is universally applicable to pretty much anybody in any country, whether they're in their home or native country or not. And a lot of this started with one very simple story, and it's the last one that I want to share with you guys today. So this particular story was of a really good friend of mine who had been into Japan for a very, very long time, and he was interested in moving out here. He did the whole saving up thing. He learned some Japanese before he came. He was very excited to come out, and he finally took the jump. He plunged right into life in Japan, like most people, needed to get a job. And before he knew it, his life revolved around going to work and coming home, going to work and coming home. And this is a rhythm that is all too familiar for many of us. I've been in it myself. I'm sure if you've been working long enough, you've probably been in it as well. Or if you're in school, it's a similar rhythm. Head to school, head home, do your assignments, head back to school. It's just a normal human rhythm. The point is, it takes effort to break outside of the comfort, to break the little walls of fear, and to do a little bit more than that. But effort more often than not pays off. Things that are easy are never, ever really worth doing in the end. And all the things that are hard, as long as you stick with them, they pay off in some way. If it's not the end pay that you expected, it's something in the journey. I've talked a lot about that journey of what took me from, you know, where I was to becoming the apprentice of the Yoshida brothers. And the main reason I was even willing to embark on that journey was because I thought, even if I never got it, even if I never ever met them again, even if I never had the opportunity to actually play the shamisen, I would run into so many interesting situations, meet so many people, and build a life on that journey. And so in the same way, even if your goal is like go out and meet a bunch of people and have a bunch of fun, you might not do that. You might go out one night and just find a neat bar. Or you might go out one night to a bar that you always go to and find out that they have a drink that you've never heard of that's really amazing. Or you might end up in Shinjuku and stumble across a Super Mario themed bar. And yes, that's really a thing. There's a Super Mario themed bar in Shinjuku. I do not know why I have not visited it for a video yet. You would think I would, but I haven't. The main point being that he got locked into this rhythm and he could not break out of it. And it got even worse the earlier it got dark. I do remember one day being like, dude, we got to go out. Like, yo, come out with me. We're going to have a great night. He's like, oh man, I'm sorry. It's already so late. I'm like, it's 5:30. Yeah, but I work tomorrow. What time do you work? I work at noon. So wait, you work at noon. It's 5:30 right now. Dude, let's go out. Let's meet some people. I had to push pretty hard that day. We finally did go out. We finally did meet some people. We hung out in Asakusa and we just decided that we were going to go around and smile and talk to people. And anybody who was like, hey, can you take a picture for us? Yes, we'll take a picture for you. I think we visited a bar or two. And in that night, we ended up making a whole bunch of new friends. I think some were from, you know, just traveling through, and some were living right in Tokyo. Some were Japanese people. And it was a really, really good night. In fact, I'm still in touch with at least two of the people that we met on that evening. But from what it seems, him and I talked again like a week or two later, and I was like, yo, did you contact those guys or those girls or whatever it was? I think these two guys were like, yo, we got to go drinking. And he exchanged info with them, and I was like, did you contact them? I was like, you know, what's up? And he's like, no, I didn't. I'm like, why? I don't know. And that I don't know is the best answer I was ever able to get out of them. And when it comes down to it, I think it's that fear of putting yourself out there, or maybe opening up your schedule and spending the money to go out drinking with people that you've never met before. And what if the whole thing doesn't pay off? What if it's just a huge waste? And that's something that a lot of people do overthink. And the main point of all of this, because I know I'm straying really hard sideways here, I promised you guys earlier on in the podcast that I would do that. The main point of all of this is at the end, the whole thing came crashing down. He, after all of his time in Japan, he got so wrapped up in this rhythm that he didn't really connect with people from work. He didn't really make friends outside of work. He ended up falling deep into his comfort, which was playing video games. He would get home from work and play games, and then play video games until he went to work, which means he was always locked in his place, in his room, just playing games. And, you know, you can encourage a friend, you can push them, you can try and get them out, but you can't control someone's life. But it was painful as a friend who knows this person. This is like a beloved friend who I love this guy, really. And it was so hard to watch this beloved friend kind of just end up in this cycle that inevitably led to him leaving Japan with next to nothing to show for his time here. And long story short, he ended up going to another country and building an entire life for himself that really, really worked out. So I really am happy to see that that went that way. And you would hope that maybe some of it came from the experience here in Japan, because I think we can only stay in that type of cycle for so long before it either destroys us or we just have to launch out and escape from it. But either way, as somebody who really, really cared about him, it was incredibly difficult to watch that whole thing happen. And that has been on my mind since. And it has been something I have thought about more often than I'm even aware of, probably. And it's been a conversation that's come up again and again and again with a lot of my friends here in Japan. And this topic of loneliness is one that's come up incredibly often. So I think that this is a pretty good pausing or cutting point for today. When I started this video on YouTube, my YouTube intro for it was that I wanted to give a little bit of value, whether it be to all of you or even just one of you. And I hope that the video content and this podcast content here has been able to give you some value today. The only other thing that I ask is that you're kind, not just to each other, but to yourself. It's hard enough to have the pressures of being an adult and having all these goals, whether it be learning Japanese or learning English or living overseas, or even for some of us just getting to Japan, without us ragging on ourselves and saying, well, you're not doing this or you're not good enough at this. So don't just be kind to those around you. Be kind to yourself. And thank you so much for listening. If you have an extra 30 seconds, it would mean the world to me if you would jump on to iTunes and leave a quick review for the podcast. Each one of those actually helps me out a lot. They end up serving as a great motivator. I really love reading them. I really love reading the comments that you guys leave. So if you've got a spare 30 seconds, right now or any time in your day today, it would really mean a lot to me if you would jump onto iTunes and leave a review on the podcast. I thank you so much in advance. Other than that, this has been a topic that I'm really glad I got to cover with you guys. The episode ended up being a little more mixed than I initially anticipated, but I hope that you still enjoyed it. I hope that you got something from it. And you guys know I will talk to you again real soon.